sound of Airworm One as it makes its approach to Beast Lick, Wyoming. Michael Dean is on his way home and sitting in for Michael. This is Lusander Fiend. Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends radio show. And with me, I have my dear friend, Ben Stone of the Bad Quaker podcast, badquaker.com. Howdy, Ben.
Hey, Lou. Isn't it great to be back on the radio?
It is absolutely awesome. We are at Pork Fest. It basically finished up today at 10 a.m., but people are still here. The cleanup crews are still going around, and campsites are being taken down, and yeah, it's a good time. So Pork Fest 11 is officially closed.
Yeah, and I spent the whole morning out cleaning up the debris and all the stacking chairs and doing all the unseen work that everybody just assumed happens by magic. There was about a dozen of us that were out there doing the work of a crew that should have been about 100, but I'm not complaining. I'm just observing.
Thank you for your service, Ben. Yeah, it's been a very good time out here. We're going to do a little recap today and go over some of our observations. This is my first time out here. Ben is an old-time Pork Fester. How many times have you been out here, Ben?
This is my third trip to Pork Fest.
Okay. How would you rate this compared to the others?
It keeps getting better every time. This year, we had a considerably larger crowd than last year. Last year was a considerably larger crowd than the year before, and it just keeps multiplying. There's more events this year than ever before. There was more vendors than ever before. There was a wider variety of things to eat, to buy, to wear, to do. It was in every way just a bigger and better event.
Yep. Well, I have nothing to compare it to, but based upon what I've heard, this has to be the best one. And I was just really amazed at it, going through and seeing all the different vendors. Of course, you had the libertarian memorabilia, the T-shirts and things like that. But there were also the different food shops and just other little side items. It was really interesting at all the things that you could get. And something that we're going to talk about later on that I really loved is all the child labor that was going on.
There was a lot of that. Yeah, yes, we got to interview a few of those people.
Yes, yes. Those kids were out there enterprising, hustling, and they might have made more money than some of the adults.
Yeah, and I think there was a couple of innovations this year that made the whole thing work a little bit smoother. They moved the registration. Instead of it being up near the office where it was in previous years, they put it down near the entrance, which made it really streamlined a lot better, separated the Pork Fest event from the campground itself that's still trying to function and do its own thing. So in previous years, you had pretty much everybody showing up for Pork Fest, going straight to the campground office, plugging up the campground office, and then being told, no, it's around the corner, and then you'd have to walk around there. And none of it was natural. None of it was obvious. It was very, very awkward and very clunky. This year, as you first pull into the campground, there's a sign, registration is right there, separate parking lot, separate tent, separate setup. It was all done that way. And it eliminated a lot of the bottleneck that used to be right there in the entrance of the campgrounds. And then the other thing I thought was really a good innovation this year was instead of trying to get everybody on the hill for the final group picture, which is really tricky because it's a really steep hill, and oftentimes it's raining, or it just rained, or it's about to rain, or there rain is involved, and the grass is wet and slippery. And they're trying to hold, a lot of people in a very crowded, slippery slope area.
Herding cats.
Yeah, it's very kind of crazy. This year, it was much better. All they had to do was just stand in the middle of the area where all the tents were, and they took the picture from up above. So the effort was put onto the individuals taking the picture rather than trying to get all those people in the middle of the thing to cooperate and do something together. So it was quicker. We didn't have to be out there for 45 minutes to get our picture taken. We didn't have to worry about sliding into each other on the slope. We didn't have to worry about any of the problems with the slope. And the picture went quicker. And here's the other great thing. I meant to mention this. In previous years, they take the group picture, and then a couple weeks later, you get it online, maybe, if you can find it. This year, they took the group picture, and by the time you walk across the park to the other side, people are selling the picture. They've got it. It's done. It's in a nice heavy paper with a good gloss finish. And, you know, it's very professionally done. And we saw that with several things that were far more professionally done than in previous years. So that's very encouraging.
Yeah, and for those of you that do wind up seeing the picture online, if you want to see me and Ben, just look for the guys with the beards.
And that's a joke because lots of people here had beards.
Yeah, Michael said that the other day. Somebody was looking for one of our friends, Derek, the programmer guy. And Michael said, yeah, look for the guy with the beard. He's probably wearing a cop block T-shirt.
Speaking of cop block, did you happen to catch any of the play that with Pete Eyre as a cop?
No, I did not.
That was, okay, first off, it's a horrible play. It's an Ayn Rand play from like 1935 or something. And even after she wrote it, she even hated it. But it's goofy. The premise of it is stupid. It's an irritating play. It's melodramatic. It's totally unrealistic. It proves that Ayn Rand lived in a bubble and never met an actual human in her life. But we took the play, and one of the guys here directed it, got it all together, got actors for it, and we did our own presentation of it. And Pete Eyre of Cop Block played the only cop in the play, which was Pete was the only person who got like almost a standing ovation when he entered the scene and came on stage. So that was pretty funny. But it had like Bob Murphy as the it was a courtroom setting. It was the whole play was set in a courtroom, and Bob Murphy, the economist Robert P. Murphy, was the judge. The prosecuting attorney was Jeffrey Tucker from Liberty.me. And the defense attorney for the accused was Bill Buport. And then it goes on down, and you know, some of the other personalities here played different parts. Angela Keaton from
Antiwar.com.
Yeah, exactly. She was one of the players, and there was quite a few others. I can't remember everyone.
Now, didn't you have a part in this play?
I did actually play the part of the murderer, who was not the accused. The murderer in the case was, or the likely murderer, let's put it that way. Because at the end, what you get to do as audience participation, you get to vote to decide whether the accused is guilty or not. And our audience decided that the accused was not guilty, which was pretty obvious. I mean, it was written in for, it's like if that was Ayn Rand's attempt at a mystery, oh man, Agatha Christie has nothing to worry about.
You know? I find it very ironic that Pete would be playing a police officer.
He made a better, well, I probably shouldn't go into that too much.
Did he play the role of a goon cop, or was he a peace officer?
He was kind of a smart aleck investigator that investigated the death of the person, you know, the was the point of the trial, and he kind of played like a 30s smart aleck cop. He went, according to his own testimony, this police investigator went into this ultra rich penthouse apartment, and he like turned on the water in the shower because he had been told that champagne came out of it, and he you know, checked out all the fixtures that were coated in gold, and he put a lot of effort into that stuff instead of like finding out who the murderer was, and then he just arrested whoever, you know, happened to be there, and with no real evidence or anything. So that part was very realistic.
Okay, so it wasn't fiction then.
Right.
Yeah. And you were the murderer.
I was most likely, it's not clear in the play, but I was most likely the murderer. I was the one that the audience was supposed to believe was the murderer.
Hippies did it.
Yeah. Well, the funny part is, if you read the description of the person I was supposed to play, it was supposed to be an elderly, distinguished, well-kept, well-trimmed type of a person, which, you know, is not me. I mean, I'm elderly, but...
But you're not that old.
That's about the end of the description. Well kept, no, you know, clean shaven, good haircut. No, no, no. Look like I live under an overpass. Yeah, that's him.
Okay. Did you check out any of the food stands while you were here?
I did. There's a couple of actual professional vendors with their, you know, with their food wagons, and they came in And but then in addition to them, there was all kinds of stuff, everything from local grown foods, from a local grown farm actually came in, and our local farm, they didn't grow the farm, they grow things on the farm, but I figured you understood that. But yeah, a local farm from right here next door to us over in Vermont, they brought in fresh food, they came in every day, they brought in fresh fish. You know, and I only got to have one of the fresh fish that they brought in, but it was delicious. It wasn't like, you know, a lot of times you buy farm raised fish, and the meat is kind of squishy,
yeah,
and the flavor is lacking. There's just not a lot of flavor in it. But this was not like this. This was a trout. And it was nice and firm and flavorful, and it just, as I cooked it, it just flaked right off the bone. It was just the perfect. It was like if I just got it out of a stream myself, and I have caught many a trout from many a stream, so I say that with experience.
Well, that's something that you definitely can't beat, and he is also the person that supplied the lettuce for our salad at Fiend Fest Thursday night. We'll be talking to him when we come back after this break. But yeah, and there were so many different things. There was a homemade ice cream. There were folks that were making sandwiches and everything under the sun. Even late at night, you could go by at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning through Agoura Valley, and there were folks out manning their kitchens and ready to prepare food. I'm so excited about being here that I can't even speak right.
You're just excited about food.
Well, yeah. I kind of dig food. I love cooking. I love eating. I love cooking and eating.
You know, there was also a guy. We have two kinds of ways that people sold food here. There was an area in Rogers Campground called Agoura Valley, and it was like three or four rows of camping spots that were dedicated to all these different businesses. But then there was also rebels all over the place selling without permission, right out of carts and other spaces.
And we are going to talk about that later on in the show. This is Lusander Fiend and Ben Stone. Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. You know, without the Star Trek communicator, we wouldn't have cell phones or computers that fit in your pocket. Because envisioning the future is the first step to real groundbreaking changes in our lifetime. That's why I love Scott Beezer's webcomic, Quantum Vibe. Quantum Vibe has allowed me to more clearly envision LibPair, or Libertarian Paradise, and help me work toward it. Who'll build the roads? You and me. Who'll draw up the blueprints? Scott Beezer in Quantum Vibe at BigHeadPress.com. That's BigHeadPress.com.
Looking for a new home with good neighbors, no income tax, an active shooting culture with excellent Second Amendment protections, a great business climate, and less government? Then Wyoming might just be the place for you. And freedom-minded folks are already there. Founded by author Kenneth Royce, FreeStateWyoming.org encourages free trade, political liberty, and voluntary cooperation. Come bask in the laissez-faire Western culture of the cowboy state. For details, visit FreeStateWyoming.org.
And we are back. And we are talking to Kurt from, say it again?
Mountain Foot Farm.
Mountain Foot Farms. Okay, so this is your first Pork Fest as a vendor. How many times have you been here?
This is my third Pork Fest.
Okay. And what made you decide to vend this time?
Because last year, which was the first year I spent a whole week here, I normally sell most of my stuff at a farmer's market, and so I'm used to vending, but a little bit different. And I went through Agoura Valley and said, gee, you know, we could do this. We could do this as well, if not better, than the other people. And there's stuff that we have that's not here. I mean, last year I had a hard time finding someone to eat a salad here, you know, to buy a salad to eat.
So, really?
So, I mean, I did find it, but it was hard to find it. I had to look around to find it. And I thought, well, you know, we could do this. And my daughter and I, who helps me in the farm and in the farmer's market, decided we'd, you know, come back next year and bend this year. So,
okay. Yeah, and you were providing individual salads all decked out with dressing and all the fixings.
Yep.
And everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you have that wonderful trout that Ben loves.
Mm-hmm.
Do you raise the trout on your farm?
Yes, I do. I raise the trout in tanks in my barn.
Okay. And what keeps your trout being firm and succulent and not squishy and blah?
Because I have a really good source of high quality water, and that spring water that just flows through the tanks, and it's always flowing water, and they're, you know, it's natural as you can be, and it's not really natural, but it's not your typical factory farm type farm raised fish. It's more natural is what I try to. So that's the niche I'm going for.
Okay.
Now you also offered spring water where you were vendoring.
That's right.
And I thought that was really interesting. You know, you can pick up all these different bottles of water that you buy all over the place, and they all like to say spring water on them, but in water bottling terms, that's a legal definition that they have played with to the point of where the average person would, if they actually saw the so-called spring that they're getting these spring water from for these bottles, you would say, that's the spring like my swimming pool is the ocean. I mean, there's just... the way that they twist truth around in order to legally call something spring water is amazing.
Spring-ish.
Yeah. But with you, it's an actual spring in the side of the mountain where water comes out on its own, right?
That's correct. And it's the same water that I run through, that the fish live in, obviously. It's the spring feeds my house and it feeds the trout, and I just took some of my tap water, which has come out of the spring, and I just brought it along and sell it. And,
Lou, I don't know if you've ever visited the so-called spring waters that are up there in Michigan, where one of the major unnamed bottling companies bottles their water, but essentially what they did was they dredged out the mouth of a river, and they dredged it out enough to where Lake Michigan backed up into the creek, and the creek was spring fed, but they're producing more bottled water out of that creek than the spring can produce. So what they're actually doing is using Lake Michigan water in the spring. So go ahead.
More Freedom Fiends after this. Truth in Advertising here.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to announce the second annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It's at the Circle Pines Center just outside Kalamazoo, Friday, August 22nd through Monday, August 25th. There will be family and grown-up friendly activities, great conversation, presentations, and bacon. Lots of bacon. It doesn't matter if you're an OG libertarian, a newbie, or just anarcho-curious. Come on out and enjoy some voluntarism. For more information, go to miplc.org.
Freedom Fiends and the Bad Quaker. Bad Fiends. Freedom Quakers.
On the radios.
And this is Lou Sanderfine. I'm back with Ben Stone and Kurt from... My God, my CRS is kicking in.
Mountain Foot Farms.
Oh, my God. I can't even remember my own name. Hippies must have done it to me. But anyway, so we're talking about the fresh fish that you have and how you have the actual spring water. You don't go out to the ocean and fill up a tank and then bring it back and call it spring water, right?
That's correct. It just comes out of the ground. It comes out real cold.
Okay. And by the way, for the salad that you provided for us, I bought three times more than what I needed, and the people ate two times more than what they should have. So hats off to you, and thank you for your service.
Sure thing. Thank you.
And so, it was the vendors this year especially that really made it a special event, because Like we were saying a minute ago, there was such a variety and a lot of healthy food. You're not stuck. You know, it's not like a carnival. It's not like a Renaissance festival. It's not like most events like this, like rock concerts, where you're pretty much stuck eating the garbage that, you know, it's all French fries and deep fried, you know,
crickets.
Yeah, or whatever the carny food that's available today. But just like at Mountain Foot Farms stand, there was a variety of healthy stuff that you can choose from, and there was a bunch of others that were healthy like that too.
Yeah, and there were people that didn't even bring any food with them.
Yeah.
They just purchased from the vendors the whole time.
Yeah, it was kind of nice for us, for my wife and I, because we travel in our RV, and we literally have like a month and a half of food with us at all times. We have a giant tank of water. We have, you know, we could go completely off-grid for several weeks with no problems at all. But we didn't have to really adjust anything. We could just walk off and buy food and not have to, you know, not have to tap into what we already had, not even have to really fix anything ourselves. That means we didn't have to do dishes. That, you know, well, I like all those things.
Exactly. Yeah. Doing dishes, I'm not real keen on that. So I always bring people with me and feed them so that they'll do the dishes.
That was that child labor we were talking about earlier, right?
That was grown up in hippie labor.
Oh, okay.
But so, Kurt, you had a bunch of different herbs and everything in pots over at your stand.
Yeah.
And that's the eating type herbs, right?
That's right.
We're not using code words here.
No code words. These are things like sage, rosemary, thyme.
Okay. Why do you keep it planted and still in the pot?
Well, it basically, people could choose if they wanted the trout to, if they wanted me to grill it, I'd say, what herbs do you want? And I would clip off the fresh herbs right in there and then put that in the cavity of the fish and grill it for them. So it would be absolutely fresh fish.
Okay.
Fresh herbs in the
Fresh herbs and the fresh fish.
Yes.
How many people did you have that just came and bought herbs for cooking with on their own?
A couple people, not many. But mainly we use the herbs just to put on the fish that we're frying, grilling for people.
Okay. How much fish did you go through this trip?
What did I do go there? 20, I guess it was about 20.
Okay.
Fish, so, yeah, something like that. I brought too many early in the week and not enough late in the week. This being the first time I've been, I didn't really know what to expect, and I'll know better for next year, but I didn't. I sold out on Saturday because I didn't bring enough then, but early in the week I had extra, and I brought them home and froze them and stuff. So I always, brought them several times. I went home several times, so I'd always have fresh fish here.
Now, you got the opportunity to do a presentation on your farm and how it works and everything like that.
Yeah, that's right.
And I saw you had a really good turnout. I kind of was hidden around the corner, and I was trying to listen and talk to other people at the same time. But it sounded like you had a really good presentation going.
Well, I hope it was pretty good. I don't know. I really haven't made a presentation like that before. That was sort of a first-time thing. So I basically gave people a virtual tour with you know, slides of my farm and explains how I did things and stuff like that.
You normally sell a lot of your stuff at farmers markets and that kind of thing.
Farmers markets and restaurants is where I sell most of my stuff.
Yeah, directly to restaurants.
Yeah. Yeah, most of the trout I sell to restaurants, and most of the vegetables I raise go to farmers market to individuals, but I sell a little bit of trout to individuals and a little bit of vegetables to the restaurants.
Do you do any greenhouse work and continue in the winter, or is the fish just your main winter crop?
I'm experimenting around that. I've got a greenhouse that's attached to the south side of my house, and I in the past primarily used that to start plants to plant out into the field. Just this last fall, I put a masonry stove in the greenhouse so I could heat it over the winter, and I'm still experimenting and figuring out how that works for over winter stuff. It's the problem is I've found is it's not so much heat as the light levels are so low in the winter. It really limits how much you can do in the winter.
Yeah, and then you also get quite a bit of snow. Do you have a problem with snow building up on the greenhouse?
Oh yeah, it happens a lot. It's one of the things. Some years we have to I've shoveled snow from the front of the greenhouse up away from the greenhouse edge because it's just built up so much. So it that's an issue.
I'm really curious about the trout because I'm a fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you get your trout? Do you buy fingerlings from a farm, or do you, hatch your own? Do you have your own spawning process?
Well, I'm in the learning stages of spawning stages. Up to this point, the bulk of my fish I buy is fertilized. I buy fertilized eggs and then hatch them out and raise them up.
Okay.
I started out buying fingerlings and raising them up, and I've gone to, like I say, I buy the fertilized eggs and hatch them out and raise. And actually, I've got some fry right now that I just took the eggs and did the whole process just this last year. And that's only an experiment. I'm learning that stage. I go in stages, and I'm learning, teaching myself how to do this a little at a time. So,
where did you learn about farming and raising fish in the first place?
Sort of a little bit here or there. I didn't go to school for it or anything. I basically found this great spring, and it's like, well, what do I do with all this water? And that was my first understanding, and I started reading books, talking to people, and found out all this water. I didn't really have all that much water. For most aquaculture situations, require huge, you know, hundreds of gallons a minute, or you know, something like that. And I'm using, you know, 12 gallons a minute, which is a lot for a home. 12 gallons a minute is a lot of water, but for an aquaculture situation, it's a very small amount of water. And so, and I got books, and a lot of the books are and stuff I read are for these real large industrial scale type stuff that they talk about, so that nothing really applied to my situation. So I would just I've just tried things. I'd go out and, well, put some fish in here and see how they do, and I'd make mistakes and I'd kill fish. And I would, you know, learn from that and keep going. And that's basically the way I've learned how to do it, is just by trial and error. And I've been doing it for over 20 years, but I've only been making money at it for, you know, I don't know, 7-8 years or something like that. I spent a lot of years losing money learning.
Well, that's the price of learning.
Yes.
That's the tuition.
Yeah.
Now, are you doing things that the textbooks say you shouldn't be able to accomplish? Have you found a way to hack what the conventional wisdom?
To a certain extent, and it depends how you figure. I mean, like I say, when I first started, one of the first things I read said, you know, you can't make a, you know, can't have a viable, economically viable operation unless you have 600 gallons a minute flow rate. It's like, psh. And then I talked to somebody else. Oh, he says, baloney, you can do it on 50 gallons a minute. You know, and I'm looking here, like, wow, what do I can do? And so, and it's like, how can you make it work? I experimented with just a plain flow through system and increased the number of fish I could see and realized I can only raise a few hundred trout on just water running away from the spring. And it's like, okay, well, what else do you do? And, I have used mechanical aeration, essentially, as supplemental aeration to add oxygen to the water is one of the things I have to do to increase the number of trout I can raise so it make it economically viable. And, I mean, the knowledge of mechanical aeration is out there. The big people use it, but, you know, the fact, you know, how much that uses it isn't really well documented, and nothing is written for small scale like what I do. So
now you started out with your operation outdoors, right?
Yeah, I started out with just I had a pond at my dad's property, and I just threw some fish in the pond and started raising them, and then did that for a number of years, and then I put a couple tanks in and put some fish in that, and managed to make mistakes and kill fish in multiple ways and basically change things. And I moved eventually to, you know, I've got round tanks in a barn and with circular flow, central drains. They're mostly self-cleaning and with mechanical aeration and that type of stuff. But I went through a whole series of ways of doing it and failed in all different series of ways. Mainly I have predation issues is what it basically, a lot of wild animals out there like to eat trout. And if you have them in a pond, the wildlife learn that and they come in and they eat your fish. And
Ben and I are not responsible. We weren't there. Hippies did it.
Yeah, most of them were four-footed, not two-footed, but there are two-footed ones out there too, predators, but.
You have in northern Vermont, you have raccoons, skunks, what else?
Otter, mink.
Oh, yeah.
And some of them are two-footed. You've got birds, mm-hmm. blue heron and hawks and stuff like that. And
would bear be a problem?
I've never experienced that. I've had bear right in my yard before, but they've never bothered the fish. I don't know why, but...
Oh, how about, the bear you have up here are not the they're kind of the gentle little brown bears, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's not going to be, it's not like, we're not talking the Canadian Rockies where they come and rip your house open like a can. And
right, but typically if you run into a bear, and I've done that a number of times in the woods, they see you, you see them, and they turn and go the other way.
Yeah.
They're as shy of you as you are of them, or would should be, I would say. I've had a case, you know, where I'm walking along and there's one that comes running up the hill, running right towards me. And it's like, oh, I stop. And it's like, he looks up, sees me, he turns and goes the other way. And it's like, oh, I'm glad he decided to go the other way, because they can run fast.
That's the case most of the time in nature.
Yeah.
Most animals would, even predators, will avoid contact with humans if at all possible.
Yeah.
A few rare occasions, some of the mountain lions in California are starting to learn how tasty that the thin joggers are out, you know, out on the paths. But mostly speaking, even predators in the wild don't have a taste for humans. We're probably bottom of the scale for feeding for most of them. Do you plan on coming back next year to Pork Fest and having another booth?
I do plan to. Yeah, we're my daughter and I, who's my partner in this, is, you know, we were talking about what we're going to do different and better next year.
Thanks for coming on, Kurt.
Thank you.
And thank you for your service. More Freedom Fiends coming up right after this.
Worms. We have not been contacted.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
What sets survival punk apart from all those other survivalist sites? A rational, creative approach to self-reliance. Applying a punk DIY ethic to survivalism without any of the fear-mongering or tinfoil hattery that pervades the survivalist movement. Survival punk covers a huge range of topics, along with a healthy bit of myth-busting. Survival punk provides a ton of dirt-cheap creative solutions to common prepping problems, with an accent on the paleo lifestyle. Check out survivalpunk.com. That's survivalpunk.com.
Freedom Fiends. And the Bad Quaker.
In the absence of Michael Dean, who is returning to his windowless bunker after having spent the week at Pork Fest, in a rare occasion that Michael actually leaves his bunker. It was pretty weird to see him here.
It was. And he is so pasty white. He's not getting enough suntan from his computer monitors. I'm sure that his heritage is English, Irish, and Elmer's glue. That's how white he is. We are joined now by one of these young child laborers that we were talking about earlier in the show. And this is Dorothy. And hi, welcome to the show, Dorothy.
Hi.
And she was going around selling refrigerator magnets, and what else did you have?
Refrigerator magnets, 3D printed refrigerator magnets.
Yeah.
That's basically it.
And so they had the little voluntarist symbol with printed in 3D with a plastic through a 3D printer, and then it had embedded a magnet into it, right?
Yep.
Now, they had a contest that was, what was the name of the contest?
It was the Agorist Pitch.
Yeah, yeah. And you won that contest, right?
Yes, I did.
That's pretty cool. You won like an ounce of gold? Was that the, yeah, I was thinking
yep.
That was the I like gold. Do you like gold, Lou?
Oh, I love gold. I even picked up a gram while I was here.
Yeah, yeah. I spent, but I didn't pick up any, but that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool that you got an ounce of gold out of the deal.
You bet.
Whose 3D printer did you use?
I used my own.
You have your own 3D printer?
Yep.
How cool. You imagine what life would be like. Imagine yourself as a kid with a 3D printer, and then project forward how the rest of your life would be. You know, in my day, we had rocks and sticks, and we were happy to have them.
and we had to walk uphill to Pork Fest both ways.
Yeah.
But, well, actually, you do have to walk uphill both ways here.
Yeah, everything is uphill. Wherever you are, wherever you need to be, it's uphill and long ways away, and you have to walk through the sun or the rain to get there.
Yeah.
Sometimes both.
Yeah. So, Dorothy, how did you get working with a 3D printer?
Well, I actually won a 3D printer in New York.
And then you won a contest with the 3D printer.
Yep.
How cool.
You're on a roll.
Yeah.
So how does 3D printing work for us old fogies here that, you know, we use silver as Bitcoin. So we don't know about this new stuff.
Well, it's got a million and one uses. You can make anything out of many materials. And
you have like different colored plastics that you feed into it.
Yep.
And then you have it follows like a program, right? You hook it to a computer, it follows the program that you give it.
Well, you upload the files for whatever you want to make onto an SD card, and then you put the SD card in the printer and tell it to print from the SD card.
Oh, so it's not actually hooked to the computer then. It kind of has its own internal thing.
Yeah.
So you could take it anywhere, and you could have been popping these things out left and right here at Porkfest.
Yeah, if it fit in the car.
Oh, how big is it?
Well, the print bed is about 28 centimeters by 28 centimeters by 28 centimeters, counting the Z-axis.
I don't know what that means. I'm old.
She's using metric.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know what that is.
So, Dorothy, did we ask Dorothy how old she is?
Yeah. How old are you, Dorothy?
I'm 12.
You're 12 years old, so here you are going around making money, engaging in child labor, and selling really good stuff. And also, I picked one up from you, and I went to get another one for a friend of mine, one of our co-hosts, Diana, and you were honest enough to say, oh, they're 2 for $10. And so, you know, you cut me a deal right there where you could have shook me down. What kind of a capitalist are you?
You know, it must take very special parents to raise a kid that already at the age of 12 is doing stuff like this.
Yeah, but they're awesome.
You have pretty good parents?
Yeah, so awesome.
Would you trade them in for like a donkey and
a pony,
bucket of fish heads or something?
No.
Thanks for coming on the show, Dorothy, and thank you for your service. Say worms.
Worms.
We'll explain it later. Second hour coming up after this break. Trip to the market.
Freedom.
The worm market.
Right there.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you could buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And welcome back to the Freedom Quakers and the Bad Fiends, wrapping up Porkfest.
We're in the second hour, Lou. Do you believe it?
We are in the second hour, and I'm still awake.
Second hour of the last and final event of Porkfest 2014. We're the last of the remnant still hanging on.
Yep.
Still clinging to the week.
Yep. Pretty soon they're going to be like, get out of here. You've been here 4 days.
The show's over. The lights are out. Go home. What are you doing here?
Yeah. One of the really nice things here is meeting the online friends that, you know, never met in person, didn't know if they were real. The ones and zeros turned into, they got 3D printed into real people. And also meeting new people that I didn't even know before. And one of those new people, a new friend, is Jim Babb. Welcome to the Freedom Fiends, Jim.
Thank you for having me. Worms.
And oddly enough, as a strange coincidence, Jim happens to be the father of our previous guest, which was Dorothy, that won the ounce of gold at the Agris Pitch.
Yeah, and was selling those wonderful refrigerator magnets.
You know, and what we failed to mention was that the ounce of gold that Dorothy won wasn't just any old ounce of gold that you'd find laying around, you know, because you know how you find just ounces of gold laying around all the time.
But every 5 minutes.
But it wasn't like that. Well, you know, every time you jump up and bash your head into a brick and then you find some gold, that's how it works, right? Because I've been bashing my head into bricks for years trying to find gold. But anyway, so what kind of gold was it?
It's a Liberty Dollar gold ounce from Bernard von Nothaus.
So it's an outlaw piece of gold that the government is chasing all around trying to steal it everywhere they can.
It's contraband gold. What could make a more awesome prize than that? That is spectacular. I mean, any ounce of gold is spectacular, but you couldn't get a better prize. Extremely generous. So it was the folks at Roberts & Roberts donated that. Extremely generous.
Cool. Robert, oh, well, I'm taping my mouth shut. Were there any other gifts that were given out for the Agris Pitch contest, like second place or anything?
Second place was $1,000 in Bitcoin.
Oh, cool.
Even third place was incredible, was a bunch of silver bullets.
I saw some of those, yeah.
One was like a huge, like 50 caliber round. I mean, I can't imagine what kind of werewolf that would take out, but you are ready. You are ready.
Yeah, I ended up with one of the 45 caliber. It looks like a 45 caliber. It's in, you know, the casing. It's not just the bullet. It's the whole cartridge. Except it's all solid silver. Pretty
gorgeous,
cool.
Gorgeous pieces.
Yeah, they
are. I've seen those before. Yeah, they are very nice.
I have these novelty shotgun shells that are actually clear, and they have silver rounds in the size of a dime.
10th ounces.
Yeah, and so it's like a 12-gauge shotgun shell, a fake one, but it's full of silver rounds. It's pretty cool. I have several of those.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, all the stuff that's out there. And what was really nice is I spent most of my money that I spent here was in silver. I spent very few of the worthless green paper rectangles.
Yeah.
So it was very Bitcoin friendly, very precious metal friendly. So you could use shiny metallic stuff. You could use ones and zeros. And the vendors were even taking the just plain zeros, the FRNs.
And if Daryl Perry is listening, I actually still owe him. He left the park, but I still owe him $6 for books that I got from him that I gave to Jeffrey Tucker when Daryl was still here. I just grabbed the books from him and said, hey, I don't have enough. I'll pay you later. And I ran off with him. And now I still owe him $6 for the books.
I'm sure you can track him down one way or another.
Or he'll track you down.
Yeah, Daryl will track me down. Middle of the night, he'll be banging on my motorhome door.
So, Jim, last night, and we're getting away from Porkfest here, but we were talking about a telephone app for the cell phone. What was that called again?
Waze, W-A-Z-E.
Okay. What's the significance of that?
Well, it's a decentralized tool that you can use as a, you know, kind of like a Garmin turn-by-turn GPS program. And it has a very large user base because it's a free GPS program. And it has the advantage, though, of getting input from millions of users simultaneously. So it's got a really neat button that says, oh, there's a road pirate. You know, it calls it police, but you know what to do. You press the button and, okay, there's a radar trap. Now the next person coming down the road says, police reported ahead. Very clever. And if it's still there, you say, you press the thank you button. And if it's not there, you press the not there anymore button. So the false positives are removed. It's extremely effective, especially in more densely populated areas where there's lots of users. One problem, though, the cost of using this app is sort of basically telling them where you are all the time. And it is that's the cost. It doesn't cost you money, but it does. You have to trade some privacy. So I'd like to find a way to do it more anonymously.
Maybe there'll be a Dark Ways app coming out sometime soon, kind of like Dark Wallet.
Yeah.
So why would somebody want to use this? Why would they want to protect their fellow slaves from getting ripped off by the highwayman?
because nobody likes that. You know, this is it's a great decentralized tool. It's like, you know, I just think most people want to be neighborly, even on the highway. You want to look out for your fellow man, and it's just normal. When I mean, it used to be you'd always flash your headlights when you'd see a cop on the other side. I rarely ever see that anymore. But you know, it's what good people do. It's like, hey, there's a rattlesnake over there. You know, watch out.
Yeah,
that's a very apt analogy or comparison.
I'm on the road a lot. My wife and I live in our RV. We travel, you know, trying to escape bad weather and travel north to south, south to north, in the RV full time. And something like that would be really handy for us.
It is, but you know, let's face it. They're, you know, they probably are tracking you by a dedicated satellite array anyway. So you're not really going to lose that much privacy,
right?
Along with just doing this in your everyday life, what are some of the other things that you do as far as your activism goes? Because I understand you're kind of active.
Sometimes, really just, bringing up great kids is probably the most important project there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amen, brother.
keeping them out of government schools and making sure that their just natural creativity isn't squashed. That's the first job. But then we still have time to do other fun stuff, whether it's jury nullification or we put on a lot of great shows, and I'm in the Philly area, so we put on a lot of great events. We've had, Bitcoin events or End the Fed events, and, Ron Paul likes to drop in on us, and we have a wonderful community of Liberty fans and, of the whole spectrum in Philly. So it's a great opportunity. I mean, we have people like Larkin Rose and Josie Wales that we can deploy as needed. So we have some great opportunities, and even Ben has dropped in on us. We need to get Ben back more, though.
Now, aren't you responsible for one of the really, really great videos out there showing, I can't remember exactly which one it was, but it seems to me like there was a guy there doing jury nullification education, passing out pamphlets in a public area on a public sidewalk where it's totally legal to do so, and you were there with your camera filming as the police had a rather obnoxious reaction to this free person just doing something totally legal.
Well, we've had a variety of responses, but that was the one I think you're talking about was in Philly with Julian Hoekland.
Exactly.
Who was one of my, ultimate favorite dudes of all. I mean, what a great guy. And he was kind of the one that got me turned on to doing stuff in jury nullification. And he came and said, hey, I want to go do some pamphleting at the federal courthouse there. And I was like, that sounds great. So at first, it was just a couple of us went. George Donnelly was there. And, we were sitting on this bench waiting to see who else shows up. Is it just the three of us? Whatever. We'll just wait a little bit longer. We're sitting on a bench, and they're already, circling. Like they come out of the federal courthouse. There's federal marshals and the protective service, and we're like, this is really interesting. And they're like, just like, what are you doing? What are you guys doing here? Oh yeah, enjoying the day. You're not doing anything. Well, I don't know. Or who's in charge here? In charge? I don't know. What does that mean? I don't know. And they never got the memo that YouTube exists. So George was just filming, and the guy just walks right up to him, just right up to the camera. It's like, if you get too close to me with that camera, I'll rip it out of your hands and shove it down your throat. And now we're like, oh, this is great. This is so good.
It's amazing how often they walk up to people and say, get that camera out of my face.
And it's right.
That's typical what they'll do. Yeah.
That's exactly how it went down. And yeah. and then mostly we're just trying to be quiet, but it's hard not to respond at all. So,
right.
So we're, they're like, what are your names? And we're like, do I have to give my name?
Am I being detained?
So, and they're like, but we just start asking them questions too. Like, is that in your policy manual? Is that the way what he just said? Is that what you're supposed to tell people? Or is that within the policy standards? What do you guys think? And they're just like,
It's not your job to ask me questions. It's my job to ask you questions.
But, you know, and that was a nonviolent encounter. Later we had a much more violent encounter in Allentown, basically doing the same thing. And George is filming. We had just arrived at the Allentown courthouse, and Julian was there first. He was pamphleting. George and I walk up on the scene. He starts filming, and very quickly went from just a normal, peaceful situation. They basically swarmed out and tackled George for filming. Like, literally just beat him to the ground, tried to take his camera, and it wasn't resisting in any way.
Right.
They wrestled the camera free, and then they charged him with assaulting federal marshals.
Even though they charged him, they attacked him. They tackled him.
Yeah.
And he is somehow guilty of attacking federal marshals.
Unbelievable. It's believable, but it's still shocking when you see it with your own eyes, because you hear these stories, but then you realize what absolute disregard they have for any kind of truth at all. And they put so much pressure on him, he was ready to move to New Hampshire. He had a property up here, was going to build a cabin, ruined his whole summer, spent his whole summer with an ankle bracelet on.
Crazy.
Terrible.
It's amazing. Government and their enforcers. The only relationship where the servants park the orders and mete out the punishment. More Freedom Fiends coming up after this. Thanks for coming on, Jim.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you for your service of raising great kids.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed, Buy Sheep for Sheep on Sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Hey, this is Squisklar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now, so there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Dig that crazy beat.
Oh, yeah. It's the Freedom Quakers and Bad Fiends wrapping up Pork Fest, the last event.
We are Freedom Fiends, F-R-E-E-E-E-E, only two E's, F-R-E-E-D-O-M-F-E-E-N-S.com, freedomfiends.com.
Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra. And also make sure you get over to badquaker.com and check out the archives over there. It is a wealth of knowledge and entertainment. It's just unbelievable. Porkfest.
2014.
And Freedom Fiends getting noise complaints at Porkfest from their very first year. I wanted to talk about some of the different things I saw out there and just basically the time that I spent here at Porkfest, because this is my first one. And I strongly recommend anybody that has a way to get up here next year, do it. It's a blast. The people from the campground have been very nice and helpful. Just all the different vendors. As far as food goes, and I love food, anybody that's met me, that, you know, got to look at that belly, they know that I love food. There was a stand up there. They were doing batter dipped onion rings, and those were pretty good. Not the healthiest thing, but they tasted very good, and they had French fries. And there was, of course, we talked to Kurt, who had the salads and the fresh trout. There were different drink things.
You know, smoothies.
Yeah, smoothies and Kool-Aid. Iced
coffee, all kinds of different coffee drinks.
Yeah, and I have to give a shout-out to a gal that I met here. Her name is Amanda, and she does homemade ice cream. Mm. She doesn't do it full-time. She just does it for Pork Fest and for fundraisers for her daughter's charter school. But she went into explaining to me how she makes ice cream and what makes it different from what she gets at the store or what we would get at the store.
Yeah.
And hers is essentially you're getting more ice cream because it's dense or it's denser than what you get. I mean, the store stuff, a lot of it's air whipped and everything else. But she goes into this whole big description, and she's like an ice creamologist. So shout out to Amanda. Thank you for your service. It was fun talking to you. And she also had child labor going on over there. She had a young gal. Her name is Maya, and I got a chance to talk with her last night. Well, you were there, Ben. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, Maya was babysitting, dog sitting, dog walking, also working at the ice cream stand. So she's going basically from sun up to well after sundown, and she probably made a fortune. I was going to ask her how much she made, but she said, "Am I being detained? Are you a Fed? None of your business." But yeah, I mean, it was great to see all these kids running around. There were little kids running around in the early evening time with glow sticks, selling them for, I think it was $1 a piece or 1 gram of silver.
Yeah.
And kids were running around with these little bags of ice cream or, yeah, no ice cream, bottled water, things like that, sodas.
Yeah.
What else? I mean, just everything under the sun. Dobby had a young girl working for him. Going out selling buttons and T-shirts and
Bitcoin not bombs.
Yeah, Bitcoin not bombs. I mean, she was good. I mean, she's like, I got this, I got that. Great sales pitch spiel, the whole nine yards. I mean, just all sorts of things. A lot of the stuff was handmade or homemade, I guess you could say.
Yeah,
Nikki Darling, she had her earrings out there, and her campmate Melissa was doing tattoos. But let's talk about what we did not see out here, Ben, because people have this wild impression of, well, Pork Fest behind those fences, it's anarchy, it's chaos.
And it was very peaceful. There was no need for, you know, uniformed goons to show up and harm anybody. Everything was taken care of. Any security issues that might have come up were taken care of internally among us, quietly, peacefully, carefully, respectfully. And there were some security issues that came up, and they were handled respectfully and peaceably.
Hmm.
There's no need for outsiders to come in and bring in their thuggery and their aggression. We handled everything ourselves. We did have even one person tried to come in and disrupt one of the speakers, and it was handled in a respectful and peaceful manner, and there was no need to call in any self-imposed authorities. We took care of these things.
I missed out on the scumbaggery. I didn't think that there was any. And also, shout out to the people from Free Aid. I saw a gal, she had like a spider bite or bug bite or something like that. Mm. And if you had a minor issue, you could go over to the Free Aid tent. They'd put some ointment on, whatever it was, and bandages, band-aids, just all that stuff. So it's a great time, a lot of family stuff going on here. If you get here next year, do it. More Freedom Fiends after this.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. I steal your labor by force through taxation.
My job is to
spy on you and
keep you from hearing things like the Freedom Fiends. I especially
do not want you to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to keep them drone-proof. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives. Do not go to freedomfiends.com and click on the torrent link and learn how to torrent Fiends archives.
I don't know what sound a worm makes, but if I did, I'd be making it. Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. Final episode of the week from Pork Fest, the last event. all you hippies, get out of here.
And if we sound a little low energy, it's because we are. Man, I'm thrashed. I have been walking probably, well, my wife and I have been exercising a lot lately. We've been walking for exercise, been speed walking and stuff like that. We're getting up to like 10 miles a day. And even though that's what we're accustomed to, like 10 miles a day of speed walking, this place has kicked my rear end. I mean, I have not walked this much in a long time. It's really, and plus it's all up and down hills too.
Yeah, same here. I actually got to a point to where my pants were falling down if I didn't have a belt on, and I'm not even a rapper. So, yeah, but I ate really well while I was here and still managed to drop a couple pounds. And, yeah, it's just a great time. But, yeah, we're burnt.
Yeah.
So we're bringing in somebody else to help us out here. We have a worldwide exclusive, a one and only interview with Tom from The Art of Not Being Governed. Welcome to Freedom Fiends, Tom.
Hello, Lucander. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm a longtime listener, first-time guest.
So tell us about The Art of Not Being Governed and basically the evolution of it.
So Art of Not Being Governed is a Facebook page that was started almost 2 years ago, shortly after the Ron Paul debacle at the Republican primary in 2012. My friends and I were searching for answers as to what do we do next. You know, Ron Paul's not here to save the day.
No great man,
exactly. So we kind of stumbled across Adam Kokesh and Larkin Rose and heard about this idea of anarcho-capitalism and voluntarism and non-aggression principle and self-ownership, and took it to heart and started to do some studying, read some Rothbard. I decided I'm not a Republican anymore. I'm a Libertarian. So I promptly decided I'm going to join the Libertarian Party and head on down to my first meeting. So after reading some Rothbard, I decided that the Libertarian Party is not so libertarian either. And I became an abolitionist anarchist. Right.
Outstanding. So what exactly do you do on the page, on the Facebook page, The Art of Not Being Governed?
So the idea of the page is to have a irreverent, uncompromising view of looking at what the world would look like through the eyes of an abolitionist. So we don't see left versus right. We see it's us versus the state. So we have a lot of humor in our memes that you might see. And we've, from that Facebook page, grew on to G+, where just recently, a couple months ago. And last year we started notbeinggoverned.com. And we have a lot of great articles on there, a lot of contributors, as well as some admins from our page. By the way, can I do a quick shout out to some of the other admins that couldn't make it to Porkfest?
No,
but okay. By all means, you must.
All right. Well, hey, I love these guys. They're all outstanding. Doug has been with me pretty much from the beginning, and he's the guy that always has the right answer for everything. So I have a lot of admiration for Doug. Jamie's another guy that came on board with us earlier this year. He's involved with a lot of our graphics, as well as being an expert on cryptocurrency, so it's great having him on board. And another guy that's done a lot for us on the blog, as well as our website, is Daniel Hawkins. So if you're familiar with the Never Been Tried series about the history of anarchist societies throughout the world, he's responsible for that.
Yeah, I've heard an interview with him, and I've looked over some of those articles. He covers Jericho, ancient Iceland, Ireland. He even touched on Zelmia, which is mentioned in the actual book, The Art of Not Being Governed.
That's correct. Yes.
So what other types of article series have you had on there? I understand you guys have something going with Somalia right now, because, you know, Somalia is anarchy. Move to Somalia.
Yeah. So Somalia is not necessarily Somalia, right? When you hear a lot about what's going on in Somalia, what they're talking about mostly is Mogadishu. Outside of Mogadishu, there's a lot of anarchy, especially in the north, which is sort of known as Somaliland nowadays. But there's a 1,200-year history of polycentric law in northern Somalia in the Horn of Africa. And it's very interesting to do some of the studying there and how that all works.
All right. Can you tell us a bit about the polycentric law?
So the polycentric law system is it's known as Xeer, X-E-E-R, I think there's probably some guttural actual pronunciation of that. But basically what that means is that there are now no written rules. There's no politicians scribbling on paper and telling you what you should and shouldn't do. Basically the way that ZEER or polycentric law works there is that if somebody commits a crime, they stand in front of a judge known as an ODAY. And basically the perpetrator's clan is there along with the victim's clan. And the clan works as a sort of insurance system so that if the perpetrator does commit the crime and he is found guilty, that the victim is compensated. So rather than being thrown in a jail where there's no compensation made to the victim is made whole through this clan system.
Actually, not only is there not compensation for the victim, there's a loss for the victim because now they have to pay the cost of incarceration as well as not getting their compensation back.
Yeah, here in our current system, it's the opposite of justice in our current system, whereas that system actually provides a method of justice.
Absolutely.
You know, I've said this for a long time, that the concept of justice can't take place unless there's true closure to the victim in a situation. That means financial, that means emotional. And for some odd reason, specifically Christians, but a lot of people, even people who don't claim to be Christians but sort of have an upper air about themselves, they have this weird concept that vengeance is a bad thing. Like, oh, you're above having vengeance. If you have vengeance, you must be some kind of a moron or some kind of a, you know, half ape or something. But the truth is, vengeance is a thing that should be kept in check like every other emotion, but it's a natural part of our being. And when you squelch vengeance, you kill an aspect of the human psyche that cannot be fixed. And I think that's something that very often with a victim of a crime, it's something that American society crushes. You know, we teach people that you know, well, just let the court system handle it. And however the court system handles it, that's justice. And then that sense of vengeance, that desire to be made whole from whatever it is that you were, had to experience, that you're just told to eat that. Just sit on it. Just grind it inside yourself and don't do anything with it. I think that's terrible on the mind to do that. And it's one of the major damaging things in American society. If you've had to experience a really traumatic thing where you almost lost your life because somebody else did something specifically to harm you, a robbery, they ran through a red light and crashed into your car and destroyed your life. And then, you know, the courts decide, oh, well, this will happen. And then that's it. Now you have to pay to incarcerate them or, through your taxes. Or you have to just sit back and do nothing. Or the insurance company says, well, here's your settlement. Here's $10,000. That's your settlement. Well, you can try to sue for more. But is money really going to fix that thing? You know, the human desires something beyond that. And that system you're describing there, mm-hmm. Tom, it provides that.
There's that restitution.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And restitution fixes that desire for vengeance because it makes you whole again, or at least as much as you can be.
Yeah, and it's really amazing how people will just put their entire lives in the hands of other people.
Yeah.
And that's what government is. It's other people. It's not magic. It's not some omnipotent, special, powerful entity. It's just people.
Yeah.
And most of them are completely unremarkable. Yeah. You wouldn't even let them in your home.
Yeah. In many cases, the people that in America that we actually trust as judges are filthy human beings. I've met a few, and I've met a couple of judges that were good people, but the majority of judges I've met, I wouldn't have them judge, in a pie eating contest.
In a pie eating contest is easy to judge.
So Tom, in that situation, who provides the judgment in something like this?
Yeah, so the great thing is there is a market mechanism that exists under ZEER or polycentric law in Somalia where a judge or an ODAY has a reputation. And, people are going to tend to want to go to the judge or the ODAY that provides, the best restitution so that, there's a win-win scenario there. So the victim is made whole and the perpetrator is dealt with.
And then the Klan ensures that that's actually going to be followed through with.
That's correct, yeah. So, yeah, the Klan typically exists currently of about 300 to 3,000 people. So it's usually close family members, cousins that, you know, they're all part of that person's immediate community.
So I'm a big fan of the Facebook page, and you put up a lot of really, really good pictures on there.
Thank you.
It's propaganda, or as I've described it before, as being digital bumper stickers to get a message out. And one series that you did that just really tickled me was the Bully series. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a great series we just put out about a month ago, and we base that on the statist fallacies that you hear very often. For instance, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. So we tried to take that concept and, you know, how can you make this easy for people to relate to? So we kind of came across the idea of using a playground bully to demonstrate that. So if you don't choose your bully, you don't have any right to complain. So that's one of the memes that we came up with. The other one was there was a couple kids hiding behind a bike rack, and another bully was kicking a soccer ball at them. And it was something along the lines of, if we don't have bullies, then bullies will take over. So it was just taking these status fallacies that you hear all the time and putting them in a very relevant graphic so that you can understand what this really means and how silly these concepts are.
I'm sure a lot of those kids on those graphics will grow up to be cops. Because that is the job of government and their enforcers, is to bully people. So where do you see the page going from here, and also the website? Because you're putting out how many articles each week now?
We're trying to put out about 3 to 4 a week right now. We'd like to see something at least once a day going up there. That would be ideal. We're getting anywhere from 600 to 2,000 hits a day, depending on the material that we have up there. So we definitely want to grow that. We're always looking for writers. So if you're a writer and you want to contribute to us, you know, as long as your ideas are in harmony with the page, that's great. Non-aggression principles, self-ownership, agorism. We're always looking for stuff like that. Cryptocurrency is another excellent topic.
Okay, thanks for coming on, Tom. This is Lusander Fien and Ben Stone, Freedom Fiends, live from Porkfest. Give us a worms, Tom.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations, and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Ben, go. Freedom Fiends. Final segment. Final event.
Redemption in the final act.
Yes, redemption in the final act. So, yeah, we had a great time here at Porkfest. And once again, I can't strongly enough recommend that people get up here if they're able to. The number of families that I saw here was really, really high.
Yeah, a lot of kids, a lot of little kids, a lot of kid activities.
The
giant zombie versus humans war that went through the whole campground was pretty amazing.
Yeah, and something else about the kids. I meant to mention this earlier. I saw chalk on the sidewalk. It said dog sitting and dog walking services, and I thought that it was the girl that I wound up interviewing, but it turns out that it was somebody else. So yeah, I mean, the kids were just running around like crazy, making money and serving and providing stuff that people wanted. So if you missed it, so what does this mean for the future? And we are joined again by Tom, who is from Michigan. What's coming up in August?
Hello again. Well, we have the Michigan, or the Midwest, rather, Peace and Liberty Fest, August 22nd through the 25th, I believe.
Yes, that's Friday, 10 a.m. to Monday, 12 noon. So, yeah, I'm getting a little shameless self-promotion in here. And I understand that there may be a handful of fiends up there.
It looks like it could develop that way. I'm going to miss it. I have previous commitments that I have to take care of. But I was up there last year, and it was really nice. For me, it was a vacation. I was able to go up and just hang out with some really good people, relax. That's when I met Tom. That's when we met for the first time.
That's correct, yes.
And it was really nice just hanging around your camp and chatting and talking to the hacker dudes that were up there. It was pretty cool.
So, yeah, and there's going to be a lot of food there. I'll probably be serving food a couple nights.
Could there be bacon?
Bacon? Oh, gee, I don't know.
I think bacon's mandatory.
Yeah, it's the law. There will be bacon there. Yeah. Yeah, I'll probably put on a steak dinner one night, chicken wings another. Tom, you might be serving up some food.
I'm thinking about bringing the smoker, yep, doing some pulled pork or chicken or something like that.
Okay, and I'm still waiting on complete confirmation for a few people, but they'll be serving food, and some folks are going to be bringing fresh natural eggs and just all sorts of different things.
This is really one of the most important aspects of having Pork Fest, because Pork Fest has shown so many people in so many different areas that we can do this. We can do exactly this all over the country. And, you know, last year it started out in Michigan. It's going, I'm understanding that other groups are starting to do this. Somebody talked to me just today about having one of these in, Minnesota?
Yeah.
And there's also a discussion of having something like this in Texas. And I was talking to one of the guys here that's a regular food vendor for Pork Fest, who's talking about doing something like this in Louisiana, where he is. He actually lives in Louisiana, comes up here to Pork Fest every year, and he's one of the mainstay vendors, always in the one-pot cook-off thing. He's won that several years. And, you know, if this spawns into things that spark up all over the United States and maybe even Canada, maybe even bleed into Mexico, that's pretty wild.
Yeah. Now, the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, I will admit, it is less formal than what Pork Fest is. There's not as many people doing presentations. Essentially, there's what's called a spontaneous order tent, and people sign up and say they want to do a presentation. There will be a few people that will be booked beforehand, but yeah, it's going to be a great bunch of people.
So you're not paying like a tremendous amount for a bunch of high flash speakers to come in and show the awesomeness of their presence, right?
I don't think there's going to be any celebritarians there. we're not in a position to bring them in, nor are we really inclined to. This is really just a way for people to go out and see what a voluntary society would look like. It's take it for a spin drive. If you like it, good, keep it. If you like being beat up and robbed, then go back to statism.
Yeah.
So, yeah, get on out there August 22nd through 25th. And you can get more information at miplc.org. That's Mike, India, Papa, Lima, Charlie.org.
We are the Freedom Fiends. You can find us at freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
Or bagclicker.com. Freedom Fiends, out.